All right, hockey fans, listen up, because we've got something special cooked up for playoff season. It's called the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge, and it's going to add some serious spice to your playoff experience. Now, here's the deal. Every playoff game, you're going to be faced with a handful of questions. It's like your own personal playoff puzzle, and it's free to join. And there are prizes, because who doesn't love winning stuff? Daily winners, you're getting hooked up with gift cards. Treat yourself to some nation gear or maybe even your favorite jersey. And for the big dogs, the people who can win an entire round, it's straight, cold, hard cash. We're talking about real dough for your hockey knowledge. So lace up those skates, stretch those thumbs, and get ready to show off your hockey IQ in the Daily Faceoff Playoff Parlay Challenge. Sign up today and play every game day at games.dailyfaceoff.com and prove your puck prowess.
Good morning, everybody. Welcome to another episode of Dropping the Gloves. Tim's here. I'm here. Tim, how are you, my friend?
I'm doing good. I'm doing really good. The Celtics, huge game one win last night.
Yeah.
It was amazing.
Isn't basketball fun? It's not. It sucks. No,
it was fun to watch. And poor Zingas back in the lineup was just, it was beautiful. So it was great to get.
What did you think of Kyrie saying, I thought I was going to get booed more?
He's such a loser.
He's
one of the biggest enemies in Boston. Like, he's just one of the most hated athletes by the city. Going back to the way that he left the city and coming back and stomping on the logo. And he's like 0-11 in his last matchups against Boston. And 6 or 7 of them are in the garden. Like, he's just, what a loser.
I hope it goes to 7 and he drills a dagger 3 in the last minute. Oh, my goodness.
That would be hard.
Devastating for all Boston fans. But
I don't know that there's a hockey player in the league that we hate as much as we hate Kyrie.
I got one.
Who?
Perfect Hatred, Liam O'Brien.
yeah. You know, but I mean Boston.
Boston? It was me when I played. They hated me.
Yeah. I mean, we don't like Kachuk, obviously, but we don't hate him like we hate Kyrie. So
yeah, Kyrie did you dirty.
He did.
It's personal with Kyrie. It's definitely personal.
Him and I, we got beef.
Let me ask you a question, Tim. You got a haircut scheduled for 3 o'clock today. You told me this. We're friends. Yes. I got my haircut this morning. Thank you for noticing.
Nice.
Would you still get your haircut if you're waiting in the lobby, which is just a small room? It's a barbershop. I go to a barbershop. I'm assuming you go to a salon. In the barbershop, you do. The guy comes in who's cutting my hair. I got there early. I had, you know, a little bit of time to kill. He goes, hey, John, how's it going? He's Joe. He's 80-some years old. Great guy. Great barbershop. He goes, just drank my mocha. You know what that means. I got to head upstairs. I'm like, so you're going to go drop a deuce and then come downstairs and cut my hair? He's like, absolutely. I'm like, wash your hands, please. He's like, oh, without a doubt. He comes down, grabs my neck. They're washed. Don't worry. Let's go. I'm like, such a weird start to a haircut. Like, he just, and his hands are all over my face.
I think if that situation, I'd want to see him wash his hands again in that sink, in that room, you know, like, let me watch it, you know?
Mm-hmm. But it was a very funny beginning to the haircut.
Because that's all you can think about the whole time now.
What barber in their right mind tells their client they're going to go drop a deuce minutes before they're cutting your hair?
It's strange.
Nobody does that. Nobody does that. It just was very, very funny. But I went, it was a great haircut. Great guy. Anyways, moving on to more normal things. Unless you got some stuff about your love life you want to share, Tim?
No. Let's get into some hockey talk.
All right. First, what did you think of the Jason Gregor interview? We did the Oilers preview on Wednesday. Today, we're going to do the Florida Panthers. I wanted to get Ed Jovanovski, and Tim's like, we just did Chicklets, so we can't get him. So we're just going to do it ourselves. But what did you think of Jason Gregor? Edmonton, yes, he knows everything about the Oilers. It's incredible.
He knows everything about everything. It's impressive. Yeah, he's great. You know, you can tell those radio guys that are like, same with Dale Arnold, just another level of like professionalism, and they're so eloquent in their words and all that. So It was good. I think he was realistic about what the Oilers' strengths and weaknesses are. And, you know, obviously he skews towards Edmonton, but I don't think he said anything that was like, you know, Jack Edwards-esque. So it was a good interview.
I do think he oversells them a little bit. Obviously, he's an Oilers fan. So I was trying to be polite, but I think he obviously thinks highly of some of the Oilers, and I do. So all in all, he's a great interview. He's so busy. It's crazy. If you open yourself up to the environment as podcasts, as radio, as everything else, every day you get asked to do something. I am minorly involved in that. And I get asked at least once a week to go on some radio show, some program, some podcast, some this or that, just because people need content. And if you get in that little realm, and he's like the king of it.
Yeah. He had amazing. Four shows that day, and one of them was a 4-hour radio show that he does in Edmonton. You know what I mean? Like, he was just 8 hours of content, basically. It's crazy.
Yeah. After we wrapped, he asked me if I would do his Wednesday dive or whatever it's called, where they like go over a player's whole career. Nothing sounds worse to me than doing that. Like, I'm going to avoid it like the plague. I said maybe I would do it.
You said, well, yes, and you're going to do it.
Initially, I said no, jokingly. And he's like, we'll figure it out. And I was like, I'll do it. I'm not going to do it.
You're going to do it.
And you'll avoid it. You sound like my parents. You're going to do it, and you're going to like it, and you're going to be happy you did it.
You're going to be so glad. Yeah.
No, I hate that stuff. Sit there for an hour while someone talks about you. No, thank you.
I love talking about myself.
Tim, that's why you have mirrors all over your room. Everywhere. Yeah. Look at, hey, handsome. Oh, are you looking at me? You're like Jason Bateman, American Psycho.
Oh, yeah.
Patrick Bateman.
Sorry, Patrick Bateman. Yeah.
That's you. Psycho. All right. You know what's not psycho? That this episode is brought to you by Bet365. Proud partner to Drop in the Gloves. You should open an account today with Bet365 and bet on a huge range of markets. So whatever the sport, whatever the moment, getting married, drop a bet before you walk down the aisle. Who cares? Whatever the moment, it's never ordinary at Bet365. Use code HOCKEYCA. Let them know we sent you. Very good. Bet365. Love Bet365. You know what the 365 stands for? 365 days. They're open every day. There you go. All right. The Panthers are back, Tim. Let's dive into it. Second straight finals appearance. Very fun. Fifth straight finals appearance for Florida-based teams. That's pretty remarkable. Tampa, 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 Florida, Florida. Something's in the water down there, southern Florida. Maybe salt, because it's the ocean. But what are we talking about today, Tim?
Yeah, well, one of the things I want to start with is just comparing this team's to last year's, because it's such a different situation. Last year, as we know, they caught everyone by surprise. They just squeaked barely into the wild card and upset Boston in an incredible 7-game series. And then obviously went all the way through to the cup finals. And it was kind of like last year was except for people like me that was mad at the Panthers for beating their team. Like, it was a fun story to root for, because they were underdogs all the way through. They were just caught momentum, caught fire, leaned into it, played a simple game, and just surprised everyone at every turn. This year, it's different. They've been one of the top teams in the league since that run. They were a great team all season long. They won their division. They're expecting to win this time. And Matthews and Maurice and all those guys have said, we expect to win the Stanley Cup this year. And we kind of thought, I think I picked Tampa to beat them in the first round. And I was wrong, obviously. And you think the Rangers can beat them, all these other teams, Boston. They're not surprised to be back here again. And this time they're playing as if they're the favorites, as if they're the best team in the league. And right now they're acting like it.
Yeah, I think the main difference is it's tough to say confidence, because last year they played like a confident team. You know, after dispatching the Boston Bruins, they were a good, solid team. They did not play like an eighth seed coming into the playoffs. They are playing more confident this year. They know what to do to win. And I think they figured that out. They dispatched teams early. They 4-1 for Tampa Bay. They beat the Bruins 4-2. They beat the Rangers 4-2. They are fresh. They're energetic. They're ready to go. And you can tell last year they were kind of just happy to be there.
Right.
You know, it was fun. They made the Stanley Cup. Yeah. Stanley Cup was the goal. They made the Stanley Cup. They were ecstatic. But then once they got there, they ran out of gas. It was a 5-game series versus the Vegas Golden Knights. You can tell they didn't have what it took. Now, this year, the goal was to win the Stanley Cup. That's the difference. Their sole goal this whole season was to raise the cup. And very few teams in the league have that as their goal. I want to say in the East, maybe three teams had that as their goal. Realistically, sure, everyone says it in the preseason, the first week. What's your goal? Well, win the Stanley. No, it's not. There are very few teams that actually say it and believe it, and Florida was this year. And you could just tell throughout the whole year. They didn't mess around, you know, winning streak, losing streak, who cares? Once we get to the playoffs, much like we bring this up a lot because it's a very useful point that Derek Stepan made. We just want to get there. We don't care what seed we are. Once we're there, it's a whole new season. And the Florida Panthers got there. Yeah, they were the second seed in the East. They had a great regular season. They have turned it on even more so in the playoffs. And the difference, you can tell the difference night and day from last year to this year. And the main difference going into the Stanley Cup Finals, Tim, that I see is the injuries. Because last year they were decimated. Minus the confidence, minus just the fatigue, game sevens, long drawn out series for three rounds in a row. They were decimated with injuries. Go over the list that we compiled of their injuries last year, because it's remarkable.
Yeah, last year, Matthew Tkachuk had a broken sternum in game three of the finals, which is just very, very difficult to play through. Ekblad, obviously broken foot in the first round versus Boston, two shoulder dislocations, torn oblique, concussion tests, just with a walking
skeleton. He was a Band-Aid, that guy.
Yeah, Gudas, high ankle sprain, which is one of the most painful things to try to play through. Yep. He should have missed a month. Instead, he missed the period just because that's what time of year it was. But that's the kind of thing that sidelines guys. And when you hear those lower body injuries from after a game, whatever, you hope it's not a high ankle sprain. That's like one of the things that everyone knows about. Bennett, again, was one of those guys that had a million injuries of playing through stuff. You don't even hear all the details about it.
I remember one story with Bennett. It was in the first round, I believe, versus Boston, or maybe the second round versus Toronto. Paul Maurice came into the locker room and Bennett could not even take his shoulder pads off. He's like, it just hurts so much. He didn't know if it was oblique, if it was shoulders or whatever it was. But he's like, I can't get my shoulder pads off. I need help. And this was in the second round. He still had two more rounds to go. So he was banged up. And then obviously Brandon Montour had shoulder surgery after the playoffs. So he was a mess. And we're not talking about bottom two lines and 5-6 D-men. That's your best forward, your best defenseman, your shutdown D-man, your do-it-all forward, and your MVP stud defenseman on the back end. Arguably four of your top five players were playing through stuff they should have no business playing. Like, no business whatsoever. So I think the big difference now, aside from the confidence, like I said, these guys are healthy too. And that's a scary thing. They're very healthy, and they're confident, and they're motivated. That's the trifecta.
And the fact that they were so quiet at the trade deadline too, because when you're a playoff team and you don't make any moves at the trade deadline, I know they made, you know, Okposo, Tarasenko, some minor moves, but it usually means one of two things. It means that the GM knows this isn't your year, so why mortgage the future to like for when you're not going to win anyway? Or it means the GM believes in you so much that he doesn't think you need much, and it sends just so much confidence to the group. And this was the second one. The GM knew that you guys already had what it takes to compete and go on a deep run and win the cup. And they've proven it so far. And it feels like the way that they play, they're so confident. They're so well conditioned. And as we've said a million times, like, it's top to bottom. They play the same way and they're so good at it.
I will say this. They didn't have much to trade because their two first round picks from 24 and 25 were gone. They traded away their 24 pick to get Ben Chiarot last year. They traded away their 25 pick to get rid of Huberto and get Tkachuk. So they had no first-round picks, but I get what you're saying. I do think it's a different story if Sam Reinhart wasn't playing the way he was. I think you would have needed to get some scoring, but I don't want to say the resurgence of Sam Reinhart, because he's always been a great goal scorer, but the blossoming of Sam Reinhart to getting 57 goals in the regular season, that helps. You know, and so they didn't need much. They went on and get some depth pieces, but they could have just done without Tarasenko and Okposo and still been the favorite in my eyes. This team was loaded, and they knew how to play in the playoffs. But we talk about adding players at the deadline. We talk about offseason stuff. Usually what it comes down to, Tim, is you got to draft. You got to build. You got to go through a rebuilding period. We talk about the last dynasties, whether it's Tampa Bay, whether it's Chicago, Pittsburgh, Colorado. All of these teams have something in common where they went through the lean years, year after year after year of losing. What comes with losing is getting high draft picks, drafting well, developing well, building that core, usually of four or five guys. And then you win Stanley Cups. Not Florida. Not Florida at all. Yeah, they had some high draft picks. Aaron Ekblad, number one overall a few years back. But other than that, they have built this team non-conventional way. How do they build this team, Tim?
Yeah, it's strange. Only three of their players on their roster, three, have been drafted by the Panthers, which is just unheard of. Like you just mentioned, like every cup-winning team is the same core coming up at the same time, drafting and just blossoming at the in the same, you know, window. This is not the case with them. Only Barkov, Anton Lindell, and Aaron Ekblad were drafted by them. And all of those guys were first-round picks, which is you got to hit on when you get them, especially the first overall. But everyone else has been trades, signs, even waiver claims. You go up and down the list. Obviously, Matthew Tkachuk last year traded for Huberdeau, Uyghur, and the first rounder. And at the time, we said that the Flames looked pretty good in that. Yeah. Because, you know, Tkachuk was leaving anyway, and they got a really good haul from them, what it looked like at the time. Obviously, now it looks like Tkachuk is the best trade acquisition in the last 20 years or something. But he's looking really good. Sam Bennett, they got for some guy named Emil Heinemann in a second rounder.
Again, crazy. Well, from Calgary. Like,
yeah. From Calgary. Sam Reinhart, they got in exchange for Devin Levi, the goaltender, and a first overall or first round pick, which was the number 28 pick. Jiří Kulich, again.
Who?
A steal.
From Buffalo. There's a theme here. They did poach these crappy GMs. They went Calgary and Buffalo to get Reinhart from Buffalo. And then a very forgettable trade. How'd they get Montour?
Yeah, another trade from Buffalo for a third round pick. For the Anaheim?
No, they got him from Buffalo for a third round pick. Buffalo got him from Anaheim 2 years before for a first rounder.
Yeah.
So Buffalo gets Montour from Anaheim for a first rounder. Somehow botches him, turns it around 2 years later and trades him for a third round pick. What the hell are you doing, Buffalo? That's a major net negative. You give up a first rounder and you lose Montour, who's a fantastic defenseman, and all you get in return is a third rounder. A day, that doesn't make sense to me. So that just feeds into the Buffalo dysfunction. Like, I don't understand if they don't know how to develop players,
yeah,
nurture them for whatever reason. He goes to Florida. The guy's an all-star. Almost won him a Stanley Cup on his back. Fantastic. All right. And then a couple free agent signings in Verhaeghe and Rodriguez. Smart signings. They get him. They retain him. Rodriguez playing on the first line now with Tkachuk. He only makes $3 million a year. He signed that this year for 4 years. It's a fantastic deal. Carter Verhaeghe, his first 2 years in Florida, signed for $1 million. Well worth that. Well, $1 million. They get Tarasenko on Okposo for nothing. Tarasenko, a fourth rounder and a third rounder, and Okposo, a seventh rounder. The big one, my man Gustav Forsling. Effing waiver wire pickup. Are you kidding me? How does this guy get put on the waivers by the Carolina Hurricanes in 2021? This isn't like 2016 when he got put on the waivers. Tim, this is 3 years ago, January 2021. How does that happen? That's just bad skill recognition from one of the best organizations for developing defensemen, oddly enough, in the Carolina Hurricanes. How much do you think they'd rather have him than Tony DeLangelo, friend of the show?
Oh, and would, even like yeah, Pesci even, and Shea and those guys. You know?
So, yeah, those are 9 guys. 5 of them who are so important to this franchise. If any one of them were to be gone, they would not be where they are right now, those 5 guys with Tkachuk, Reinhart, Bennett, Montour, and Forsling. Those guys are cornerstones of this team right now. And they never got drafted. So take that, hockey purists.
How many cup-winning teams in the last 20 years do you think you could look at, and maybe I'll do this over the weekend, that didn't have at least 10 guys drafted by them? And 10 would kind of be a low number, like 12, 15, you would think, and then a few trade pieces or whatever. This is 3.
Vegas.
You know what I mean? Well, Vegas is the obvious exception, right? But yeah, like this is, it's unheard of what they're doing. And it just speaks to the GM making smart moves. I saw the thing about like 6-7 moves they made, like OEL and Kulikov and all these guys for the same price, yeah. That Leafs got in Reeves, Klingberg, and Bertuzzi. You know what I mean? Like they got like 7 starters for that same price. It's just
but
amazing.
At the time, you can't fault the Leafs for getting Klingberg and Reeves. Like Klingberg was a great defenseman. He just gets hurt, and Reeves, who knows what happened to him. But yeah.
Not the best Toronto. It's just a credit to the Florida team, what they've done. So
yeah, Bill Zito. Has he ever won General Manager of the Year? I don't even know if he's if he's won it, but he's made some very good moves and shrewd signings too. He's not extending himself with the contracts he's giving out. He gave Barkov $10 million. Yeah, he deserves it. Matthew Tkachuk, after leaving Florida, signed for 9.5. You don't think every GM in the league right now would look at Matthew Tkachuk and say, oh yeah, I'll sign you for 9.5 for the next 6 years. Yeah, he's 100% worth it, especially with the salary cap going up. And on the back end, Forsling 5.75. Like, are you nuts? Very smart, doesn't extend himself in contract. I guess the Bobrovsky one is the only one, but I don't even know if he signed that contract with Sergei Bobrovsky because he signed the $10 million contract 4 years ago. Well, Dale Talon signed him on that. So that wasn't even Bill Zito, but yeah, great GM. Yeah. Love
the
that.
Last few years, Jim Neal, Dallas last year, Sakic, Eberflore, Lamorello, Sweeney, McPhee.
Lamorello?
2 years in a row.
Yep. With who?
Islanders. Both of them.
Crazy. Worst GM ever.
Ray Shiro. Yeah. On and goes. Yeah.
It's just an old boys club, the GMs. I've seen the inner networks of how you win awards. It's not that exciting. It really isn't. And it has a lot to do with who you know and who you like and favoritism. It really has nothing to do with merit. It really doesn't.
And whose turn it is, right?
I talk to voters, many, many voters, the writers, the this and that. It is a lot to do with, well, he's had a great career. You know, he's due. He's had a good 4 or 5 years. It's his turn, so... I don't know. I don't get too excited about it because it's just a sham. It really is a sham. All right. You know what's not a sham? Paul Maurice. This guy's only, what, 54 years old, I want to say? He's coached in almost 1,900 games. Isn't that bizarre that he might go down as the most games coached in NHL history? Like, that's crazy to me.
It's 1,848. That's only regular season. That's not counting postseason, which is just crazy.
Yeah.
And the crazy thing, too, is like it's you compare him to a guy across the down the hallway from him, Chris Knobloch, has 69 regular season games. He took over because if you remember, they 9-1-2, 12 games in the or one. What was it? 2-9-1, whatever they started 2-9-1.
Off with. 2-9-1, yeah.
And then they came back and won one more, even though we thought they were going to Woodcroft was going to get fired. He wins the next one. Then he gets fired after that. So, yeah, 69 straight. And yeah, just what's the math? 1,800, basically, game differential there.
Yeah, and then it just similar ages. It gets you thinking. It's like, what is it more advantageous to have an experienced coach who's been there, done that? I'm looking at Maurice's coaching history. He started off with the Hartford Whalers, for Pete's sake. Like, that's how old he's been in the game. But 1995, he was their head coach, and he went to Carolina for 6 years, Toronto for 2 years. Back to Carolina for 3 years, Winnipeg for 8 years, and now he's been in Florida for 2 years. Head coach the whole time. He literally has no time off. He took a little break between Carolina and Toronto, but other than that, he's been fired and hired in the same offseason 4 times.
It's like those quarterbacks like Brady and Breeze and Peyton Manning and Rodgers, like they have all these stats, but they also have the stats for like most playoff games lost. You know, yeah. Like most series lost just because they've been around forever. Chris Knobloch, by the way, has never lost a playoff series. Maybe there's something to be said for just, you know, what he lacks for experience, he makes up for in inexperience.
Yeah, and I don't think there's you have to have a ton of experience to be a good NHL coach. It helps. It definitely helps when you get into situations. But Chris Knobloch is just taking that theory and throwing it out the window. He's been pushing all the right buttons. Jason Greger touched on that last show where everything he does, every lineup adjustment he does seems to work. And on the other side with the Florida Panthers, I don't think Maurice has had to have any adjustments whatsoever. He hasn't had to make many hard decisions. Bobrovsky's been playing lights out this whole playoffs. Their defense has been relatively unscathed with injuries. You see on the other side across the country, Knobloch's had to pull out Desharnais. There's been issues with their goaltender, their forward lines. He's had to sit guys, and a whole new third line has come in and a whole new fourth line, and Kane's been hurt and not very good. So he's had to make some pretty tough decisions really early in his tenure as a coach. So maybe Paul Maurice just hasn't had to make much decisions. He just rolls four lines. Let's go. These guys already knew how to play from last year. So who's the better coach? The guy who's been fired 5 times? Or the guy who's fresh and motivated and maybe has some new ideas and has only coached 69 games in his whole NHL career? Who would you take, Tim, if you were a player? Maurice or Knobloch?
I would still take Maurice. I just feel like it's made probably a fear-based decision, but I would still take the guy with the experience.
I just watched Dodgeball. The big black guy's name was Maurice. Maurice. All right, let's get to advantages, ranking these teams, because I feel like when we had Jason Greger on, every scale was tipped towards the Edmonton Oilers. Every single one. Their kill's better, their power play's better, their five-on-five's better, their goalie Skinner's unbelievable. Everything was tipped in favor of the Edmonton Oilers. We're more an unbiased observers, which we should be. Let's start in the goaltending. Stuart Skinner versus Sergei Bobrovsky. Who do you like, and be honest? Skinner's played pretty well lately, but let's be honest here. It's Bobrovsky,
it's
right?
Bobrovsky. I don't think it's particularly close. I mean, that said, I don't think that like Skinner can win this series. He can give you a chance to win every night, but Bobrovsky is far and away the better goaltender.
You truly believe Skinner could win them a game every night? I think he has to not lose the game. He is more apt to costing them the game.
Let me reword that, because I don't want to make it seem like he's the one who's winning you the series. I just mean like he can play well enough for you to win the series. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't think he can win them a game. He did versus Dallas in game six. That's the outlier. I think when you look at his totality of work, he's more apt to lose you a game than he is to win you a game. Where Bobrovsky, in the Rangers series, he played lights out. He's playing fantastic. Boston didn't put up much of a fight because they're dog poo, right, Tim? And then versus Tampa Bay, they just worked Tampa Bay. But yes, Bobrovsky is by far the better goaltender. He's got the pedigree. He's got the Veznas. He's got the confidence. And he's Russian. All right, let's talk about forwards across the board, 1 through 4. I think obviously the top guys, Edmonton, but when you look at a line, it's not just McDavid, it's not just Drysdale. You have to take into account the whole first line. Let's go line by line because Greger said it, everybody knows it. It's going to be Barkov versus McDavid. As a whole, are you taking the Florida Panthers first line of Verhaeghe, Barkov, and Reinhardt, which is a solid line? Or are you going McDavid, Nugent Hopkins, and Hyman?
Which one, man, like? That's so hard because I want to say the Barkov line just because of what they've done in this playoff, shutting down Pasternak and shutting down Zibanejad and shutting down
Stamkos and Kucherov.
All those guys, like no goals, no 5-on-5 points, all that stuff. It's like the unstoppable object versus the unmovable object, whatever. But I feel like you have to go with McDavid, especially just the firepower and what Hyman and Nuge bring. It's close, but you have to go with the best player.
I agree. It's hard for me to say that because McDavid is very good. And I think the reason I'm giving it to the Oilers is because of Hyman. It's not because of McDavid. I feel like if Hyman's not there and they had Kane riding shotgun with McDavid and the Nuge, I would go Florida. Hyman is the difference maker on this line. He's so good. He's done so well this year. All right, second line, Florida, Sam Bennett down the middle with Tkachuk and Rodriguez now on the right side. And the Oilers, they interchange this line a lot. They're going to start with Holloway and Kane with Drysdale, but they have gone with McLeod and Perry. They've gone with Janmark at times. But initially, first game, it's supposed to be Kane and Holloway with Drysdale. Who are you taking in the second line matchup?
This one's an easier one for me. It's Florida. It's Bennett and Tkachuk and Rodriguez to boot. But yeah, I mean, Tkachuk is arguably your best player or certainly best offensive player. And he's on your second line. I know he just matches really well against anyone because of the well-rounded game that he has. And so, yeah, and Bennett is just a great playmaker. We saw that assist on Forsling's goal. Like he's so good at, you think physical, you think punchy in the face, but he's so talented too. So this was an easier one for me.
Do you see a fight happening in game one or two? Because you know it's going to be Tkachuk and Bennett, and they were going to focus on 29. That's all they're going to do. Do you see Kane sticking up for him, or Nurse, or Corey Perry, or someone trying to dissuade these guys from trying to get in 29's grill?
Yeah, maybe. Because I saw a clip yesterday. It might have been Biz, honestly, but he basically said that Evander Kane is such an X factor for this series because if he's healthy, like he's really the only answer they have, especially in their top group that can play back Florida style. Like the others can just withstand it, but they can't answer it. You know, Drysdale and McDavid are not going to, I know what Greger said about Drysdale being strong and heavy. He can't do what Bennett and Tkachuk are going to do to him, but Evander can. And so if he's healthy and he's feeling good, and he sees the moment. Yeah. We might see a fight from him, and he's really the only one that could do it in that top six.
I don't think so. I don't even think he should be playing in the top six. He's had a terrible playoffs.
He's been injured.
Okay.
But I don't disagree. I know.
He's got 8 points in 18 games. He's not. He hasn't even been physical when he has been healthy. So it's not like he's setting the tone. Let's go. The Oilers are very shy away from physical play type team. They don't get into the rough stuff. I think their most physical player is Matthias Ekholm.
Yeah.
So I don't see them initiating anything. I don't see them even responding. That's the smartest thing that they should do. If those guys get into it, if they want to try to mess with 29, you pull Drysdale aside or you talk to him before the series and you go, oh, you got to suck it up, man. We'll try a little bit, but you are going to take some beatings. Do you want to raise the cup or do you want us to defend you? Those are the two options. And I feel like you just let him get beat. As crazy as that sounds, it's better for him to get slashed and hacked and hit and then just let it go. Water off a duck's back. You know what I mean? Because if we try to defend you, we won't win. We won't be able to defend you. That's what I think the Edmonton Oilers should do. But going back to those two lines, yeah, Florida's second line is pretty solid. All right, third line. And I think this is where you start to see the difference between these two teams. The Florida Panthers are able to roll out Eetu Luostarinen, Anton Lindell, and Vladimir Tarasenko. I think they really asserted themselves in the Dallas series. And the Edmonton Oilers have to roll out because you're moving around your third line. You lose the Kane and that. You have Janmark, Henrique, I'm going to say it right, and Connor Brown. Connor Brown's got 4 points this playoffs. Henrique has two. I know he's been injured. And Janmark has 2 goals. It's clear-cut Florida, right? Or is Henrique going to, keep picking up his play?
I mean, to his credit, the Oilers are 8-2, I think, with him in the lineup. You know, he's an important piece. And he, like you said yesterday, he solidifies that third line. But no, yep. Florida's got the better third line. And this is like you said, this is where they start to separate themselves.
Yeah. And then the fourth lines, I don't mind Edmonton's fourth line. It's Perry, Ryan, and McLeod. They're a solid pairing. They don't play outside of their weight class. They know what they're supposed to do. And then Florida's is Lorenz, Steinlin, and Okposo. I don't feel like there's a huge advantage here. Kevin Steenlin's, it's Steenlin, excuse me. He's just such a moose. So good. But I, who are you taking on the fourth line?
Yeah, I mean, I guess we can call it a wash. I might give it to Edmonton, though, if I have to pick a winner. It's close.
I agree. They're only going to get 10 to 12 minutes. But yeah, I will say I'll take Edmonton just because Perry's got that pedigree. He's been to how many finals now in the last million years? A bunch of them. So he might bring some of that grizzled veteran sage advice that we like to say. All right, moving down to the defensive pairings. Let's just do a total of 6 D-men. Florida Panthers, Forsling and Ekblad. Very good. Mikola, Montour, very good. OEL and Kulikov, somewhat good. Okay. Then on the Edmonton Oilers side, you got Ekholm, Bouchard, very good. Nurse, Kulak, Broberg, Cece. Okay. I think the top two are pretty even. Ekholm, Bouchard, and Forsling and Ekblad are comparable. Then after that, it's Florida, right?
Yeah, it's Florida. It's Florida. And I mean, I don't know. You're going to need one of those guys to step up and have a big one. Maybe we finally see Darnell Nurse flourish and thrive in a way we haven't really seen him do in this playoff series. Maybe he rises to the moment, and maybe Kulak and CeCe and some of those guys step up. Like Greg Jason said the other day, they've been pretty good in this playoff series for all that you've asked them to do. Limited role, don't do too much, and they can do okay. So maybe they'll surprise us, but Florida right now on paper and just from what I've seen, just seems like they have a much better defense overall.
So just to, based on that, players, I think Florida has the advantage. Better goaltender, better defense, maybe a wash in it forwards. Edmonton has higher end guys. Florida has more depth. I think what it comes down to, and this is the crazy thing, because Edmonton has a huge advantage, is special teams. When you look at the stats based on this playoffs, a usually porous penalty kill for the Edmonton Oilers, best in the league, almost 94% PK rate. Playing fantastic. I think Jason Dreger said it. They killed off 27 straight or something crazy like that. I don't know if that's right, so don't fact check me, but a lot. They've been playing great. And on top of that, their power play percentage is 37.3, which is incredible. Absolutely incredible. A good power play, 22-23%. Score 1 every 5 chances. That's a good power play, 1 every 4. These guys are almost 40% clipping along. And this is not a small sample size. They've played great throughout the whole playoffs. Usually, if you're a special teams guy, you want both to add up to 100. That's the goal. you know, 80% PK, 20% power play. That's, you know, what you're striving for. You look at a team this playoffs, like the Knights, they had a 71% PK, 25% power play. Does not add up to 100. Not very good. Colorado Avalanche, they were 73 PK, 36 PP. That adds up to 100. So that's okay. When you look at the Edmonton Oilers, 94 and 37, they're rocking 125. It's incredible, Tim. It's absolutely bonkers what they're doing on special teams. So Florida Panthers, not too bad themselves. Their PP percentage, more down to earth, 23.3. Very good. Their PK percentage, 88.2. Add them together, it's over 100. It's 105. What's great? Not quite to what the Oilers are doing. So when you look at special teams, it's Edmonton Oilers all day. And usually in the playoffs, if you take advantage of your special teams, if you're scoring on power play, not putting goals in your own net when you're on the PK, you're winning games. So valuable to get a PP goal every single game. Will that be the case this series? Is a special team going to play a huge factor, Tim, do you think?
I think it is. And just to tie this back to Florida, one of the questions we all have to wonder is what their discipline level is going to be, because they like to cross the line and sometimes they get themselves in a little bit of trouble. They've done pretty well on staying on this side of the line for most of these playoffs. And like I said, like you think back to the Bruins series, for example, Pastrnak had a few goals. All of them are on the power play.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like that's where they can beat you in. And there's no team that can beat you better than Edmonton can in that situation. So I feel like Florida is going to really have to be disciplined and not to try to do too much. But I think the good thing is that because Edmonton doesn't really have an answer, I don't think it'll take a whole lot of extracurriculars, as Jack Edwards like to say, for them to get their message across without having to straddle the line, because Edmonton's not going to push back too much. If they did, because Florida's going to retaliate even better, and that's where they get the penalties. So I feel like they're going to be okay, but it is a big question going into the series.
Yeah, I think the referees are going to play a huge part in this, because the Panthers will test the boundaries. They're going to scrum after the whistle. They're going to poke and jab and hook and slash McDavid and Draisaitl constantly. They did it to Marchand. They did it to Kucherov. They did it to Zibanejad and Kreider and Panarin. We saw those battles throughout the playoffs, all series. Are the refs going to call it? Because we know McDavid, he probably should get more penalties, you know, called against him than he does. He should draw more, because he's so effective at moving the puck, keeping his feet going, the hooks to holds and stuff. But he does get liberties taken on him, the slashes and stuff. He whines a little bit, not too much. Are they going to call it by the book? Are they going to let him go because it's a Stanley Cup Finals and they don't want to be a factor in the outcome? We'll see how it goes. I don't know who the refs are. I'm interested to see who the game one refs are. That'll dictate a lot. Is it going to be just alleyway to the penalty box for the first period to set the tone for the whole series? Or are they just going to let him play? Which I hope they do. Let the boys play. That's what I like to say. All right, Tim. We've gone over everything very thoroughly. If I don't say, I think these teams are pretty evenly matched. We were talking before we came on. Who are you going to take? Tim and I don't like to overlap. I said, I don't know. And it's a good thing. When you look in years past, last year, the Knights were just rolling through the playoffs. And they rolled through the Stanley Cup Finals in 5. The year before that, the Avalanche rolled through the playoffs. They were playing fantastic. Tampa Bay was down and just beaten up, and they rolled through the Tampa Bay Lightning. The year before that, it was a Lightning. And they were unstoppable. The year before that, it was a Lightning. And it was unstoppable. This year, I have no idea. I really don't. I still, to this second, firmly believe either team could win the cup, and it would totally be justified. These teams have greatness sprinkled throughout their whole lineup. They deserve to win, both of them. And there's no clear-cut winner. So I'm going to leave it to you, Tim. Who do you think will win the Stanley Cup in 2024?
Yeah, I mean, everything you said was spot on, and I agree. And it's really hard to make these predictions for all those reasons, but I'm going to go with the Florida Panthers. I think just because, and I admit I've watched more of them than I have of Edmonton just because of a time difference, but what I've seen from them over the last month and change is just a team that's just so well built for this playoffs and this game to just push their will against their opponents on a nightly basis. When they lose, it's close. And when they win, like, they really just, it's impossible to keep up with. It's very difficult to match. And I just think these teams are so different. They're evenly matched, but they're so, so different. And I just feel like Florida is better equipped to win a long, hard fought series. And, you know, think of the goaltender, you think of just the depth, and it just seemed like this team is the one to pick. So I'm going Florida.
Yeah, I've I could pick Florida. I will pick the Edmonton Oilers because I do think this series will be won. A, in the first game, whoever wins the first game, I think will win the Stanley Cup. I think in the last 100 years, the team who's won the first game has won 76% of the Stanley Cups, something crazy like that. So game one does mean something. On a more minute level, Edmonton proved a lot to me in game six when they got that lead against the Dallas Stars and they held on to it. In years past, they wouldn't be able to do that. They would give up two or three and they'd be a dogfight all the way till the end. They'd have to come back and score some more goals. I feel like they've learned from their mistakes. They know how to hold a lead. They will get an early lead on the Florida Panthers, I think, in most of the games. And I think they will be able to hold on to it. I could be totally wrong. But I do think they've learned from, you know, years past where they've just floundered leads and, you know, let it get away from them. So I think the Edmonton Oilers will win. I hope it goes to seven. I hope we have a good series. It's going to be fun to watch. And tomorrow night it starts up. So let's get into something else, Tim. You're taking the Florida Panthers. I'm taking the Edmonton Oilers. First Canadian Cup winner since 1993. And the Toronto fans will cry, gnash their teeth because it's not them. And it should have been them. But it's not. All right, Tim. Let's do this Wendy's ad. Wendy's is always a fun one. I love these ads. Yeah.
Well, frozen pucks are awesome when they're in the back of the other guy's net. But that doesn't mean you want to eat one. That's why Wendy's only ever uses fresh beef that's never seen the inside of a freezer in all of their burgers. Whether you order a Baconator, Dave's Single, or even a JVC, you'll only ever find real fresh beef that's real juicy and loaded with fresh toppings. So download the Wendy's app, check out the latest deals, and order a burger that's only job is being delicious.
I love Wendy's. I really do. So if you're going to get fast food, just you might as well get Wendy's. And not because of their ad writers, just because it's a great product. It really is. My kids, when we go on the road.
I was going to ask, which ones do your kid like the most? If it's Wendy's. BK Wendy's, it is. Yeah.
It's because of the fries and the McNuggets. Well, they're not McNuggets. They're just nuggets. Yeah. Isn't it funny how Wendy's has just like trademarked, like it's a McNugget. Doesn't matter what store you get it from, it's a McNugget.
Yeah, McDonald's, yeah.
Man, when I used to work at McDonald's, I think I've told this before, lunchtime, I would just get 30-piece McNuggets and all the sweet and sour sauce, and I'd make myself a burger. I was the worst employee. Absolute worst employee they had. We went camping one time, me and my friends, and we would just bring – like, we were not good packers, but I was like, I got the food. Borrowed a huge case of patties, like quarter-pounder patties, and took them camping with us. And just like threw them on the grill. They were like Frisbees, not frozen. Well, no, they were frozen. Wendy's is not frozen. Good stuff. I'm not a good, if you want to hire me at McDonald's, don't do it. I'm terrible, terrible employee. All right, let's do some quick hits, Tim, and get out of here.
Yeah, Joe Pavelska, we mentioned this the other day, has unofficially announced his retirement. He said, quote, "This is it for me. Plan is not to play next season." Him and his family are moving back to Wisconsin. Hadn't said totally that officially, but he's done.
Will he join a team in management position?
Yes. Senior director of player scouting.
I'm serious. Do you think he'll go somewhere?
Yeah, I think so. I think he's been around the game too much. He wouldn't know what to do without that.
I think he either joins USA Hockey, less time constraints, can kind of just pop in and out, maybe be, you know, scout, help build the USA Hockey program, or he becomes a professional golfer. So he's very good at golf. Very good at golf. So don't sleep on Joe Pavs going the golfing route. Like, he plays in all those pro-ams and stuff. Wins them. Very good golfer. But sad to see him go. I'll shoot him a text, see if we can get him on the show.
That'd be great.
I wanted to give him a little space after the season-ending loss. Hey, you want to come on the show? Like, I'll give him another couple weeks before we ask him.
He said yes every time you've asked, right?
He has. Well, we're very close. Very close. But anyways, Trevor Zegras.
Yeah.
Shocker. Who cares at this point? They're listening to offers, Pat Verbeek, to Trevor Zegras, but the asking price is high. Have we heard this? Tale as old as time. Every prospect who just has issues with their team, asking price is really high. Jacob Chychrun, they wanted like a 4 first rounders. They traded him for like a second rounder and a Wendy's cheeseburger. It's just like, of course it's a high asking price. Like, no one wants this dude. Are you kidding me? You're not going to get it. Think a team's going to give up two first rounders? What are you, Brandon Hagel? It's crazy. But yeah, Pat Verbeek wants him gone, like in a bad way. So he's trying to drum up interest. No one's going to bite on that clown. All right, speaking of guys maybe potentially being with the new team, Seattle Kraken are reportedly shopping Shane Wright as well, former first-round pick. So keep an eye on that. He obviously hasn't had the start to his career that he wanted, got a cup of coffee last year, played okay. But as a whole, 2 years into his professional career, blah, 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 not very good. Not very good for Shane Wright, so keep an eye on that. He was a first-round pick for the Seattle Kraken 2 years ago, sixth overall, I want to say. So not good for Shane Wright. Another guy they're talking to, Matty Beniers.
Camp's coming up. Yeah.
Camp's coming up soon. Still does not have a contract. Negotiations are, I never know where this, they're expected to pick up next week. Okay. He's coming off his entry-level contract. Do they go short-term? Do they go long-term? Tim, what do you think for your friend, Matthew Bernier?
Beniers. Yeah, I think he does one of those 4 year deals or whatever to take him to, he wants to go be a UFA at his next contract. Right. And the team wants to keep him an RFA as long as they can. So I don't think he signs one of those 8-9 year deals. I think he signs a 4 year or something like that.
The four, I don't believe will take him to a UFA. The four takes him to an RFA again. So he could potentially do that because he's 21. So yeah, if he does a four, he has one more year, one more RFA round. If he does an eight, when he's done, he'll be a UFA. So that's the usual going rate. So we'll see. I think if Seattle and him are smart, I liked what Jason DeGregor says. Who cares if you're going to be an RFA again? You're going to get paid. Salary cap's going up. There's going to be more money in the system. They're going to want to keep you for a longer amount. Sign a 3-4 year deal. Let's go for it. Because you if you continue to play good, you will get more money every contract. You're just betting on yourself basically at this point. So I think he signs a 4 year deal, gets him to 25, signs another 3 or 4 year deal, and that's the new going rate. I think people should do that. All right, Jacob Trouba broke his ankle this season. He had a kidney bean sized chunk came off of it. Wasn't weight bearing, so he could walk on it, but he said his skating was limited. We could tell.
Yes.
Yeah. Like, and this is an honest question. At what point do you have to just take yourself out of the lineup because you're costing your team games? And he did. He cost them 2, maybe 3 games in the playoffs. Obviously cost them the last game. At what point you just had to say, I can't go. I'm sorry. Put someone else in. Because he wasn't doing anything. He was obviously laboring. I think that was a mistake. He, you know, maybe his pride got in the way. I want to play. I'm tough. Are you? We know you're tough, but you're not very good. I don't know.
If I'm a Rangers fan, I'm a little bit glad to hear this. At least there's some reason to explain why he played so poorly, right? Well, even though it doesn't feel like an excuse like the Pettersson thing.
No. He's obviously hurt, but I think he should have not played. If it's that bad, there's a guy who probably could be better waiting in the wings. I don't know who they had as their seventh defenseman, but I'm sure he could pivot and move and make better decisions than Jacob Trouba did. He was a liability when he was on the ice. He wasn't very good. All right. Finishing up with the Utah Hockey Club. No. I shouldn't say that. Utah.
Right.
Who are we down to, Tim? We're down to 6 names. I think they went from 20 down to 6.
Yeah, there have been over 500,000 online fan votes, which is something you're familiar with, huh? The team is down to 6 possible names, and I want to get your take on it. The Utah Blizzard, Utah Hockey Club, or Utah HC, Utah Mammoth, Utah Outlaws, Utah Venom, and Utah Yeti. What are your thoughts?
I like them. I don't think we go the hockey club route. We're not European football clubs. I don't enjoy that. I think you should have a name. That one is out for me. But I think the other 5, all of them could be good. I wonder how Yeti would work with the copyright stuff. I don't really like Venom. Makes me think of Spider-Man. Not a fan of it. Outlaws, I don't know how that plays with Utah. Outlaws seems like a more cowboy thing. Is Utah cowboy territory?
Not really. No, it's like Mormon territory.
Yeah. I was hoping for Utah wives. I thought that would have been fun because the multiple wives with the polygamy in the Mormon religion. But that's not an option. I think the ones it'll be are Mammoth and Yeti. I think those two will be the final two. And I think at the end of the day, it'll be the Utah Mammoth. What is a mammoth? Is it it's the big elephant, right?
Right. It's like a woolly mammoth.
Yeah, I think that would be fun. What do you think?
Yeah, I like outlaws, even though it's like, are they going to, it's crime, right? Outlaws are lawbreakers, but
bad boys.
I think that's a cool, that would be a cool dynamic. It would be a cool mascot, do some cool logo stuff you could do there. So I'd pick that one.
You're such a bad boy.
I know.
You got your motorcycle and your sleeveless vests and your tattoos. Look at you go. You ride those ones. Crazy. If you're watching on YouTube, you could have saw Tim, how he rides his motorcycle.
Big handlebars.
That's incredible. The choppers. It's embarrassing. All right, everybody. Well, listen, next time we talk, game one will be in the books. And we'll be able to break it down. So have a good time watching the game tomorrow night. Hope you guys do not get a poopy hand barber. And we will talk to you on Monday. Cheers.
Thanks for listening to Dropping the Gloves with John Scott, a member of the Nation Network of Podcasts. Subscribe wherever you get your podcasts from to never miss an episode.